From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. The comic book series American Splendor is the opposite of superhero stories. It's about the day-to-day life of its author, Harvey Pekar, who worked as a file clerk at Cleveland's VA hospital until his recent retirement. The stories are about his jobs, his friends, neighbors, strangers, the jazz he listens to, the books he reads, the ups and downs of married life, and getting treatment for cancer. The new movie American Splendor is based on the comics. Paul Giamatti plays Pekar. Hope Davis plays his wife, Joyce Brabner. On today's Fresh Air, we'll meet Pekar and Brabner, as well as the team that wrote and directed the movie. American Splendor won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. American Splendor, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. Hundreds of Liberians turned out today to welcome the first contingent of Nigerian peacekeeping troops. The Nigerians, who will try to help bring an end to the Liberian civil war, landed at the airport outside the capital. The BBC's Barnaby Phillips reports from Monrovia.
When the Nigerian soldiers move on from the airport to the city of Monrovia, they will find a dangerous and volatile situation. At the moment, the rebels and the government militias are separated by a river. Today, there was sporadic firing across this river, and by the evening, great plumes of smoke were coming up from a building in the rebel-controlled part of the city. This is where the aid agencies want the peacekeepers to go, towards Monrovia's port, so that they can bring in more supplies. And this is where the UN has its food stocks, so desperately needed by the population.
The BBC's Barnaby Phillips reporting from Monrovia. California Governor Gray Davis has asked the state Supreme Court to move the date of his recall election from October 7th to sometime in March. Davis's attorney, Michael Kahn, says election officials aren't prepared for an October vote and the results would be a disaster.
It's a Florida-style fiasco because the registrars are not ready to run an election that lets all the people vote. And the only way to avoid a Florida-style fiasco is for the court to come in to intervene now and to make decisions now about how things should be and give us certainty.
Davis is also asking to have his name listed among the candidates who would replace him if he is recalled. Right now, California election law prevents the subject of a recall from being on a list of replacement candidates. A front-page article in the Washington Post set off a wave of speculation today about Secretary of State Colin Powell's future in the Bush administration. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
White House and State Department officials complained about the Washington rumor mill, saying the Post article was typical of a slow August news day. According to the article, Deputy Secretary Richard Armitage told President Bush's national security advisor that he and Powell will leave the day after the next presidential inauguration. Armitage himself called that nonsense, telling ABC Radio's Sean Hannity show no such meeting took place. Powell, who's viewed as a moderate in the administration, has also repeatedly reminded reporters that he, quote, serves at the pleasure of the president. Nevertheless, most Washington insiders don't expect him to stay if President Bush is reelected. Sources close to Powell say that he, like most of his predecessors, will only serve one term as Secretary of State. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
Stock prices came to a mixed close today on Wall Street. The Dow Industrials gained 32 points to close at 9,186 in active trading. The NASDAQ Composite Index lost a point to close at 1,714. The S&P 500 gained 2 to close at 982. This is NPR News. Episcopalian leaders have put off a vote on whether to confirm the election of the denomination's first openly gay bishop. The bishops are investigating allegations of sexual misconduct against Reverend Gene Robinson, the bishop-elect of the New Hampshire diocese. Robinson has been accused of touching a man inappropriately and of being involved with a website for gay and bisexual teens that had a pornographic link. Robinson's election was already controversial because some church leaders opposed naming an active homosexual as a bishop. It's not clear how long the investigation will last. Russian President Vladimir Putin is demanding improved security measures after last week's suicide bombing that destroyed a military hospital near the breakaway region of Chechnya. The blast killed more than 50 people. NPR's Lawrence Sheets reports from Moscow.
Putin was shown on TV scolding officials over what he called incomprehensible slackness. A suicide bomber was able to drive the truck packed with explosives through the gates of the military hospital in the city of Mozdok. A senior base commander in the garrison town has been suspended. Russian officials suspect the bombing, the latest in a string of such incidents, may have been a revenge attack by an extremist Chechen faction. Many of the soldiers at the hospital had fought in Chechnya. There's been no claim of responsibility, though, and more moderate Chechen separatist groups deny involvement. Putin declared the latest suicide bombing would not derail plans for a presidential election in Chechnya this fall. Separatists who are effectively excluded from running have denounced the vote as a farce. Lawrence Sheets, NPR News, Moscow.
The S&P 500 gained 2 points today to close at 982. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from White Wave, makers of Silk, an organic lactose-free soy milk available in supermarkets, natural food stores, and in neighborhood Starbucks. Silk is soy.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie, American Splendor, is an adaptation of the comic book series of the same name. No, it's not another movie based on a superhero. The American Splendor comics are a series of autobiographical stories by Harvey Pekar, which he's published since 1976. They're about his daily life, working as a file clerk in Cleveland's VA hospital, collecting jazz records, running into annoying friends and strangers on the street, dealing with the ups and downs of married life, and being constantly disgruntled about how little money he makes. His book-length comic, Our Cancer Year, co-written with his wife Joyce Brabner, was about having lymphoma. Pekar doesn't draw, so he relies on artists to illustrate American Splendor, including his old friend R. Crumb. The movie stars Paul Giamatti as Pekar and Hope Davis as Joyce Brabner. They first connected through letters and phone calls when Brabner was a partner in a comic book store in Delaware. Here's a scene from one of those early phone calls.
So you married or what?
I'm divorced, thank God.
Look, I think you and I got a lot in common. You know? How am I going to get you to come visit me in Cleveland?
Cleveland?
Yeah.
You think that's a good idea?
Yeah, it's a great idea. You know, you should meet me because I'm a great guy. You know? Despite the way my comics read, I got a lot of redeeming characteristics.
I don't know. Where would I stay?
I don't know, with me. You know, don't worry. I'm not gonna put no moves on you.
I'm not worried about that. Hold on. I just spilled my chamomile tea all over my...
Yeah.
Although American Splendor stars Hope Davis and Paul Giamatti, the real Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner are interviewed within the film, commenting about their lives. The movie won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We invited Pekar and Brabner to talk with us. Harvey Pekar, Joyce Brabner, welcome to Fresh Air. How do you think the movie American Splendor compares with your real lives? Harvey, let's start with you on that.
My real life? I'm even more harried and frantic than you see there.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Joyce, what do you think?
Well, it's, you know, we're watching people who look better than we do and, you know, sitting on furniture that's better than the stuff that we have. And for some reason, everything that's happening to them has an arc and it seems to all be taken care of in, what, 80, 90 minutes, you know. So things go awfully fast.
Whereas real life leads in many directions
yeah.
and in slow motion.
Yeah.
Could we listen to a scene together from early in the film American Splendor? And in this scene, let me back up and say, Joyce, you were a partner in a comic book store in Delaware and a fan of
right.
American Splendor. And then you and Harvey started communicating by mail and then phone. Then you decided to meet in Cleveland, where Harvey lived and still lives. And then Harvey, and then in the movie, Harvey takes you, Joyce, to a restaurant. And here's the scene as you're looking over the menus This is right after you first met. And Hope Davis is playing Joyce Brabner. Paul Giamatti is playing Harvey Pekar.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Something's wrong. You keep looking around everywhere.
I guess I never imagined you'd eat in a place like this.
What, me? No, I've never been here. I thought you'd like it. But obviously you don't, do you?
It's fine. What difference does it make?
I don't know. None, I guess. Oh, you got a lot of meat on this menu.
You're a vegetarian?
Kinda, you know. I mean, ever since I got a pet cat, you know, I've had a lot of trouble eating animals.
I support and identify with groups like PETA, but unfortunately, I'm a self-diagnosed anemic.
Uh-huh.
Also, I have all these food allergies to vegetables, which give me serious intestinal distress. I guess I have a lot of borderline health disorders that limit me politically when it comes to eating.
Wow, you're a sick woman.
Not yet, but I expect to be. Everyone in my family has some sort of degenerative illness.
That's a scene from American Splendor with Hope Davis portraying my guest Joyce Brabner and Paul Giamatti portraying my guest Harvey Pekar, and it's based on Harvey's comics, American Splendor. Harvey, Joyce, what's it like to hear Giamatti and Davis portraying you?
Well, it's not strange. A lot of times people think that it's strange for me to hear somebody playing me in a theater or in a movie or something like that, but it's not, because, well, I'm not saying that, you know, other people wouldn't find it strange, but I don't find it strange because people have been drawing me in comics for 30 years or more,
right?
And they've been I've been in a few documentary movies, and the book has been dramatized about four times, or portions of it about four times, you know, before an audience. So it's not unusual. I guess I've gotten used to the idea of somebody else portraying me.
Joyce?
Well, you know, I'm alternately just knocked out by the accuracy in spirit, if not in fact, that comes out. I mean, I think they nailed us. But you also wince at the little things that aren't exactly the way you remember them.
Well, good. Would you compare that scene from the film
with what really happened
in the restaurant when you went out to dinner?
Okay. Well, Harvey didn't take me to a really fashionable, you know, yuppie chain. He took me to McDonald's. And I just was a real good sport and sat there and ate the French fries. he was, but I guess Bob and Sherry decided that I deserved better. And
they're the directors and writers.
The
yeah,
directors, right. And then they based some of what they saw on observations of us as we are now. And actually at the time, I was the vegetarian and Harvey would eat different kinds of meat. And that was my cat that turned Harvey into an ardent vegetarian after we moved in. So, but it's, you know, who cares? I mean, these are things that I don't even think my mother knows.
So Joyce, Hope Davis said that when she was acting early on in American Splendor, that that you were giving her suggestions, and it was making her very self-conscious to have you on the set, so that she asked you if you could leave. And I think it made her very uncomfortable asking you to do that, but she was just getting so self-conscious. What's your memory of that?
It's pretty different because the only contact I had with Hope was, you know, the time that we spent together before she went to work acting. We spent some time, and you know, she had questions, and I tried to give her some answers and some explanations, you know, backstory, things like that, what was, you know, behind some of the stuff that was in the script. But I went down and I watched it, and I watched it from a distance, and I got a message from Ted Hope, the producer. She sort of took me aside and said, Hope is freaking out. She feels like, you know, your eyes are burning into the back of her neck, and she just feels very, very uncomfortable doing this with you. And so I was asked not to come down and watch, although they did arrange for me to, from time to time, look at it through the remote or, I don't know, hide me out in the bushes or something like that. So it made me a little uncomfortable during lunch breaks because I would never know, you know, I tried to sit as far away from her as possible. And, you know, she'd say, come on over here, come on over here. And I think, I don't want to contaminate her with my joyousness or whatever it is. But I never gave her any suggestions on the set. I never said anything. You can't do that because you have to be quiet and let them film.
When you both decided to meet in Cleveland, what were you expecting from each other? Harvey, what did you expect Joyce was going to be like? And did you think that this was going to be your wife?
Oh, I was sort of hoping it. Yeah. I expected she'd be like she'd been on the phone, you know, like pretty straightforward, maybe a little acerbic, and with a good sense of humor and, you know, basically a pretty honest person, and, you know, a person who's pretty loyal. And I guess that's what I got.
And Joyce, what you were expecting based on not only your phone calls with Harvey, but, you know, reading his autobiographical comics?
It wasn't the reading. It was strictly the visuals. I thought much about this guy, but I really had to check him out in person to see whether or not he smelled bad. He had any twitches, Tourette-like syndrome, you know, symptoms, things like that. Because I had no real clue as to what he looked like, and you know, like I said in, I said in real life before I've said it in the movie that with a range of artists from Jerry Shamray to R. Crumb, you know, Harvey was presented to me as anything from you know, the missing link to just this sort of, you know, this sort of noble, you know, with a high forehead, you know, young Brando type.
So where do you think he falls in that range? What did you think of him when you met him?
Well, he was more muscular than I thought he would be.
Harvey, in the movie, the first thing you say to Joyce when she gets off the bus in Cleveland is, you know, right off the bat, I want you to know I've had a vasectomy. Right. Is that the first thing you really said to her?
He said that to me when we were talking over the phone. When I said I was coming out, he just blurted it out. But they don't show too much of the telephone conversation, right. So they just moved that up a bit. But it really had that kind of impact, you know, and just came out apropos of nothing.
Did that seem presumptuous to you?
To me?
Yeah.
It seemed Harvey.
My guests are Harvey P. Carr and Joyce Brabner. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Harvey P. Carr and Joyce Brabner. The new movie American Splendor is based on P. Carr's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. P. Carr doesn't draw. Several artists have illustrated his work, including P. Carr's old friend R. Crumb, the father of underground comics. Crumb was P. Carr's first collaborator. You met Crumb in 1962 when he moved to Philadelphia from Philadelphia.
Cleveland, yes.
And he lived
yes.
around the corner from you, and you used to go record
right.
collecting together. He wrote right. an introduction to the first collection of American Splendor comics, the first anthologized version. And yeah. I'm going to read something that he said. He said, "Harvey was the first person I ever met who was a genuine hipster. I was very impressed. He was heavily into modern jazz, had big, crazy, abstract paintings on the wall of his pad, talked bop lingo, had shelves and shelves of books and records, and never cleaned his apartment. He was seething, intense, burning up, always moving, pacing, jumping around, just like a character out of Kerouac." What kind of connection did you make with Crumb? I know you shared a passion for music, for record collecting, but look, what was it about your sensibilities that you think really connected?
Well, I liked him very much personally, I'll say that. He was a real calm, quiet person. I mean, I know he's done some pretty wild things, but talking to him, you know, had a calming effect on me. And I guess you could figure if I was like Crumb said I was, I needed some calming down. And later on, I can remember discussing my theories about comics with him, like as to what kind of stories you could put on in them. Or, you know, I was telling him I thought you could put any kind of stories in them, or, you know, things like that. And so for years, these ideas were percolating in my mind about how to do a different kind of comic book. And in 1972, when Crumb was staying with me at my house or at my apartment building, I wrote down some of the stories I had made up, and I did it in storyboard fashion with panels and dialogue and captions and directions to the artists. And he looked at them and he said, "Wow, these are fine, you know, like, could I take some of these home, illustrate them?" And I was just totally, you know, knocked out. I mean, that Crumb illustrating my stuff would give it instant credibility, you know. And I was thrilled, and I've always been very grateful to Crumb for doing that. I mean, if not for him, I probably would not have gotten into comics at all.
When he first drew you, now you're used to all kinds of artists drawing you, and you're used to actors portraying you. But that first time when he drew you, when you were not used to it, what did you think of the way he drew you? And I should mention that I think of all the artists' portrayals of you that I've seen, his portrayals of you are the most kind of, you know, like neurotic and worried looking and ethnic looking.
Yeah. Well, I was a neurotic, worried ethnic and still am. I was just very impressed. Crumb just never disappoints me when he illustrates my work, and he sometimes surprises me by doing things I didn't expect. I mean, like, for example, in a story called Hypothetical Quandary, that and maybe some other stories too, his work really knocked me out because this was a straight, serious story, and he and his illustration was less cartoony and more realistic than it normally was, and it worked. It seemed like nothing this guy could do, you know. It seemed like everything the guy did worked. You know, he was that sharp, that keen.
And you never said to me, like, make me more handsome.
Oh, no, I would never presume to do that. No. I mean, I didn't tell people on the movie set what to do, and I didn't tell Crumb. I don't tell these people, you know, usually what to do. It's just like I just give them an assignment and I take, you know, pretty much what's given to me. I mean, I've fortunately been working with a lot of really good artists, and I don't have to, you know, struggle or fight for what I want.
Joyce, you were a reader of American Splendor before you met Harvey.
You should ask me about how I looked how I felt when I was first rendered in the comic.
I'll go ahead, answer that question.
Okay. I did ask that I not be drawn like a comic book female. And the first artist who drew
Wait, comic book female meaning like big curvaceous, lots, you know, big bosom.
Yeah. basketballs pushed down inside a spandex leotard, things like that.
The standard R. Crumb female, in other words.
No. Crumb never drew me. The first artist who drew me as, well, he'd been doing a lot of illustrations for a local strip joint for ads or something like that. So I came out looking like a Barbie doll, and I'm not even talking about the new modified Barbie doll who has had breast reduction surgery or something like that. I was long-legged, straight-backed, you know, enormous front. And the weird thing was that I was blonde. Harvey and I have the same color hair, and there are plenty of pictures of us, and there'd be pictures of us standing together in the same light. He'd be the brunette, I'd be blonde. And I remember bringing this to the artist's attention after it was done, and he said, "Oh, my God, you're not blonde." And that's because in comic books, women are supposed to be voluptuous and blonde and completely not looking like me.
So did the artist comply with your request? And Harvey had it?
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, part of the fun of all this is to send it out and see what somebody's going to come back with. It's not, we'd be drawing them ourselves if we really wanted to have that kind of control.
Harvey, did you want Joyce to be portrayed as more glamorous than she was in real life, or did you want it to be as true to who she was as possible, just as you wanted your own depiction to be as true to yourself?
I wanted things to be accurate, but
We weren't paying this guy enough money to start insisting on major changes.
I have to say though that I think Joyce looked a lot less like a female superhero than her remarks would lead you to believe.
Well, Harv, this is the
he did draw you with glasses.
The first artist that I'm talking about was Mitch.
Yeah, I know. I know who it was.
Okay. Afterwards, we never worked with him again. And afterwards,
I worked with him one more time.
One more time. Yeah. But other artists got the point because we're more direct about it. And then I started coming out looking like this harpy, with rays coming out of my eyes, deadly rays that would bore into Harvey's head while he would not wash the dishes appropriately, things like that.
Yeah.
Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner will talk more about American Splendor in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Grossen. This is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, by A&D and Cold Case Files, an original forensic series, Evidence Talks When Victims Can't, Mondays and Tuesdays at 9, 8 Central, A&D, The Art of Entertainment, and from Delta Trade Paperbacks, a division of Random House, publisher of Pink Slip, a novel about love, work, and family by Rita Cerisi, author of Remind Me Again Why I Married You. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we hear from the writing and directing duo that made the new movie American Splendor, Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini. And we continue our conversation with Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. Pekar writes the autobiographical comic book series American Splendor. Many of his stories have been about his married life with Brabner, who used to run a comic book store. She's also written journalistic comics. Now there's a new film adaptation of American Splendor, which stars Paul Giamatti as Pekar and Hope Davis as Brabner. But the real Pekar and Brabner are also in the film, talking about their lives. Joyce, when you got married to Harvey, you knew that you would be a character in his stories because the stories are autobiographical. And mm-hmm. So it changed your life not only because you now had, you know, a partner in life. You were also in a position where parts of your life together were going to be described in this comic book. What was it like for you to suddenly be a part of the comic book that you had read and to know that things that you said, things that you did might end up in the story?
Well, it was a little annoying because I could no longer enjoy the comics once a year. I always knew what was going in, and so I was deprived of that, you know, the experience of just opening a fresh new copy and finding out what had happened to this character this year. But it was sort of incumbent upon me to make sure that our marriage had a happy ending. I first became really aware of what was going on when, after about a year or so, people, you know, send fan mail to Harvey all the time, and we got letters that said things like, well, we weren't real sure about you, you know, in issue 9, but now that we've seen what's going on in issue 10, you know, it seems like you're here to stay and you're good for our man. And so, you know, the marriage was approved of by all these people who don't know who we are but just read about us in comics.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, to have readers weighing in on whether you're the right choice.
it's either people like that or relatives, and Harvey didn't come with a whole lot of in-laws and relatives.
That's funny. So you have to please the readers.
Yeah. And it matters just about as much. You know, we see them and hear from them about as often as you'd hear from, you know, long-distant aunts and cousins. And
we know there's parts in American Splendor, the comic, and American Splendor, the new movie, where you seem to drive each other a little crazy. What's it like to expose that part of the relationship to the public? That's the kind of stuff people like to not have people see.
Well, actually, in my case, it's very liberating because now that everybody sees what I have to put up with, I mean, people are almost offended if Harvey doesn't have a meltdown or something or do something gauche or
it's like part of the show.
Whatever. I think it's when you try and hide these things, you get into trouble. But now it's like he gets paid to be this way. He gets paid to be squirrely.
Harvey, what's your take on this?
Well, I don't deliberately act, you know, neurotic, although I guess I am. But I don't try, you know, I don't do it because anybody's paying me to do it. And I'm glad that Joyce allows me, you know, so easily to write about our disagreements and stuff like that, because I don't want to idealize our marriage. At the same time, we've been together for 20 years now, and we're still working things out, and we're still, you know, growing. And I think it's a good marriage.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. And Harvey writes the American Splendor autobiographical comic books. There's a new movie adaptation of American Splendor, and it stars Paul Giamatti as Harvey Pekar and Hope Davis as Joyce Brabner. And how many years have you been married? 20 years?
Yes. 20.
20.
One of the best-known works that you did was a collaboration between you and Joyce called Our Cancer Year, about the year that you were diagnosed with lymphoma and you had chemo. And it was you were very, very sick. But then you went into remission and seemed to be clear. And was it after retirement that it came back?
Yeah, that's where
It came back right after the movie wrapped.
So did you have to do chemo all over again?
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad physically as last time. Actually, Harvey had been pronounced cured, and so this might actually be coincidental rather than related. But it was still really, really rough because he was still kind of depressed and out of sorts, trying to find his way after retiring. I mean, he'd retired, begun working on this movie, and then, boom, he's got a tumor again.
In what way was it not as bad as the first time around?
Medically, because when Harvey had his treatment 10 years ago, it was horrific. They were telling him he was taking the second harshest form of chemotherapy, the second harshest protocol, and it was very rough on him, but this time physically it was better. There was a lot of deja vu, though. I mean, George Bush was president then. George Bush was president when he had lymphoma this last time. We were in a Persian Gulf War. The first time he had cancer, another Persian Gulf War. I was involved with 15-year-olds from different countries who were war survivors, and now I'm guardian to a 15-year-old girl. So it kind of felt like we were stuck in the same tape loop.
I think one of the main reasons that I didn't suffer as much the second time as the first time around when I had cancer was that they'd come up with some milder medication.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They had much mm-hmm. better medication.
So did doctors give you the all clear this time around?
Yeah, I'm in remission again.
Good.
I was just found in remission again last. Well, I mean, it's been some months since I've been in remission, but I just saw the doctor last Friday, and I'm still in remission. So,
good.
Knock on wood.
My guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie American Splendor is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie, American Splendor, is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. Harvey, I'd like to ask you a few things about your background, starting with your parents. This comes from one of your comics you wrote about your family's attitudes toward getting into fights when you were a kid. You wrote, "My family considered physical violence and even sports as unthinkably barbaric activities fit only for Gentiles." Tell me a little bit about your parents.
Well, my parents were both from northeastern Poland, from shtetls. My mother's from a place called Brestovice, and my father's from a place called Nowy Dwór. And my mother came over to the United States first in the 1920s, and I don't know. I think maybe partly because she was, like, really short, you know. She couldn't find a husband. And they sent her, she got sent back to Europe again in 1935. And I guess at that time, she was on a, you know, she was supposed to be, or maybe my relatives who were still there, we're supposed to be, you know, looking out for her and trying to find her somebody. And she did come up with my father. My father's, as long as I've known him, my father's been real religious. And my mother was a communist. We were for Henry Wallace in 1948. But they seem to have resolve their differences that way. I know that
They were both short.
Yeah. Well, my, you know, my mother wouldn't go to shul on the high holidays and stuff like that. And, but they got along. They respected their differences. I don't know of too many cases that are like that, because they both believe pretty strongly in what they you know, in my mother's case in her politics, and my father's case in his religion.
I could see how both a communist parent and a religious parent would think that reading comic books was frivolous and something to be discouraged. What did your parents think of your interest in comic books and music or any other parts of pop culture?
Well, they thought it was just a waste of time. I didn't read comic books from the age of 11 until I moved out of the house, so that was one thing they didn't have to worry about. But I mean, and my father tried to be tolerant of jazz, although I don't think he liked it very much. He collected Chazanishe records, you know.
What kind of records?
Chazanishe, cantors.
Oh.
The records of cantors like Yisula Rosenblatt or Moishe Kosovitsky there used to be a guy that used to sing for the Met that was also a cantor by the name of Richard Tucker. I don't know if you know about him.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he used to, so my father was into collecting these records too. I wasn't the first record collector in the family.
Did you like those cantor records?
At first, they just made me so depressed and sad. I couldn't take them. But
why were they depressing?
That's the way they. Have you heard them? You've heard them, haven't you?
Well, I've heard cantors. I'm not sure I've heard the records that you're talking about.
Yeah, but the style is extremely, you know, it's really, you know, like a melancholy. Pain style of singing, and I really like it now, I really do. But and I you know collected about, I don't know, maybe 100 or more cantorial LPs, you know, just have so that I could refer to them, and but it's. Well, one guy described it as the cantors were men with tears in their voices.
Right.
It's sort of like a. I don't want to make it too close an analogy, but it's sort of like equivalent to blues singing in a way.
I regret that we're really out of time. So one last question for you both.
Okay.
How do you and how do you not want the movie adaptation of American Splendor to change your lives?
The big thing about doing the movie is access. It grants Harvey access to more chances to work, which means he isn't going to hang around the house and drive me crazy. And he can, you know, I mean, he's, you know, as somebody who's self-educated and been self-published for as long as he was, I think at this point it'd be nice if he wouldn't have to keep proving himself every time he got a gig. So we like that. According to form, we're supposed to get divorced as soon as the movie peaks.
I mean, because that's what happens when
that's just what
when celebrity when, strikes.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as celebrity strikes, I'm gonna have to run away with a, I don't know what, cameraman or something like that.
Or Harvey gets to run away with a 25-year-old model, right?
Well, he can't really run.
Perish the thought.
Harvey, what else do you or do you not want from the movie?
Well, it's pretty much like Joyce says. I'd like the opportunity to get more writing jobs. And, you know, like, as a matter of fact, every time somebody will interview me or something like that, well, I'm not going to do this to you, Terry, but I would ask them if there's anything, you know, anything at their magazine or anything like that that I could do. Can I write some jazz criticism for you? Can I write some, literary criticism for you? I'm pretty aggressive and maybe obnoxious about trying to get work, but I realize that it's really essential that when the dust has settled from this movie, that I still am, you know, somebody that people want to work with.
Are you willing to risk being obnoxious to get that?
It comes easy.
Yeah, it's. I don't think there's any risk involved for the being obnoxious. I don't even think there's any willing. I think Harvey is more or less compelled to be obnoxious to get this stuff. He's a very driven character.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't help myself. What can I do?
Well, I regret we're out of time. I really enjoyed talking to you both.
Thanks.
Love the movie, love the comic, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Terry.
Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie, American Splendor, is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. It won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. American Splendor stars Paul Giamatti as Pekar and Hope Davis as Brabner. The film, which is in part about married life, was written and directed by the husband and wife team, Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini. They're our next guests. They also directed the documentary Off the Menu, The Last Days of Chasen's, about the famous restaurant which catered to a Hollywood celebrity clientele. Did Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner give you any advice on writing for them or on writing for the fictionalized versions of them?
Well, you know, they were pretty hands-off. It was kind of amazing. I mean, Harvey really prides himself on this warts-and-all portrayal. So, I mean, his one caveat, if he had any, was, you know, please don't whitewash me as a character. You know, that's not what I'm about. You know, when you do a true story about someone who's alive, you know, your big fear is that they're going to interfere and try to protect themselves in the process. But they didn't do that at all.
Now, in the documentary part, in one of the documentary parts of American Splendor, Joyce, Harvey's wife, says that Harvey can be very depressed and therefore very depressing. Is that something that came up with you, like dealing with both of their mood swings on the set? You know, because Joyce is prone to depression also.
Yeah. Harvey's obsessive compulsive and very sweet at the same time. So it's an interesting combination. You know, he would call us a lot with, you know, worried about things. And I don't think he ever really believed the film was happening. So he was always worried before, you know, when we were in pre-production that it was going to fall apart. And then once things were rolling on the set, he was able to relax a little bit more. Although when we needed him to come on and do his thing, he was, you know, pretty grumpy and hard to manage. But that's just Harvey, you know. And Joyce, I think, you know, she protects Harvey a lot. So she's naturally suspicious of everyone, you know, that comes on board and, you know, I guess they had some bad experiences in the past. So she, you know, she was very protective of Harvey and his portrayal. And, you know, on set, maybe she had more of she was a little more cautious than Harvey in watching. And, but ultimately they weren't much of a problem.
Harvey Pekar's big moment of celebrity was in the mid to late 80s when he was a guest several times on the David Letterman show. And those appearances were always really weird. He'd be on to promote American Splendor. And, you know, Harvey would be mocking Dave for being a phony celebrity. And David Letterman would be mocking Harvey for being so eccentric. And things usually go kind of like so smoothly. It's like one celebrity to another on these late night shows. But Harvey was so eccentric and so himself that it was this like really odd match, and you'd kind of be on the edge of your seat thinking something's going to go terribly, horribly wrong any second. And for these appearances, you use the actual David Letterman footage with the real Harvey Pekar, except for the very last in this sequence. And this was the time when Harvey Pekar was on Letterman wearing his On Strike Against NBC t-shirt and going on about the conglomerate that owned NBC, and David Letterman was getting very obviously uncomfortable with it. Why didn't you use the real David Letterman footage for that? Did they not want you to use it?
The real Letterman footage for that fight was restricted by NBC. Harvey names a lot of names, and it was, I think it was immediately restricted after broadcast. You know, we actually had a copy of it, and we had a VHS copy. We were able to edit with it just to see what it would feel like. And in truth, it was so hard to understand because they were kind of yelling over each other that, you know, when people saw it in the cut, it didn't make any sense. And they had a lot of questions about it. And it also felt, at that point in the story, it felt wrong to leave the character, the Harvey character that Paul Giamatti was playing, where he was emotionally. You know, he's kind of, it's a very interior sequence. He thinks he may have cancer, and his wife is away, and he's extremely depressed. And it's all kind of part of a longer sequence. So we thought, let's recreate it and have a different perspective on it, you know, shoot it from behind the stage and kind of tie it to the rest of what's going on in Harvey's life.
Why don't we hear your version of that that appearance by Harvey Pekar on David Letterman? And this is the fictionalized version from the film American Splendor.
Harvey, this is not the forum. This is not Meet the Press.
You just want me to talk about simple-minded bull, David, but I ain't co-opted like you, man.
Oh, relax,
I want to say,
man.
For instance, like, I want to talk about a conflict of interest situation. Harvey. Can we do that, David? How about that? You know, like GE owning this network, NBC. GE has basically become a military, industrial, financial
communications
complex.
Can we get the singing shih tzu back out here, Larry?
Is
he left the building yet?
NBC is just going to cover what they do fairly? That's funny, Dave.
Harvey.
I got other things I want to talk about, though.
That's enough,
Harvey. Just shut up, man. Don't push me, man. I'm doing my own thing.
Harvey.
That's Paul Giamatti playing Harvey Pekar and Jeff Peters playing David Letterman in the new movie American Splendor, which is based on the comics, the real-life comics of Harvey Pekar. And my guests are the director-screenwriter team who made the movie, Shari Springer-Berman and Robert Pulcini. Have you heard from NBC at all about this scene?
I don't think so. I don't know if the producers have heard anything. We certainly haven't heard anything.
Hopefully we won't be the people hearing about it.
I mean, you know, the thing is, Harvey has a lot of affection for Letterman. I think at first he was in on the joke, and then it became tiresome for him, and he had to destroy it, you know. So I think if you talk to Harvey, you'll see that he actually has a lot of affection for the guy. I mean, they're both from the Midwest, and, you know, it was an interesting relationship.
Also, Harvey told me, he said, you know, man, since I did those shows, we both had really hard times. I mean, both Harvey had cancer, and David Letterman had his open heart surgery. So I think, like, illness humbles everyone, and they kind of found that as a common denominator.
We'll talk more about American Splendor after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Shari Springer-Berman and Robert Pulcini. They wrote and directed the new film American Splendor, which is based on Harvey Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. Now, the two characters at the center of your film, Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner, are married, and they have a kind of neurotic, bickering relationship. You are married, too. Shari, Robert, you're married to each other. Does being married yourself help give you insights into how to write a married couple?
Well, we certainly know how to write arguments, I think. I think we have a good ear for that. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because sometimes Harvey would come up to me and complain about Joyce on the set. And, you know, Joyce would go up to Shari and complain about Harvey. And it was a very strange dynamic.
Right.
Yeah.
There were a lot of times when Joyce would call and say, you know, Bob would pick up the phone and she'd say, put Sherry on the phone. And she'd start complaining about something Harvey did. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, Bob does the exact same thing. And, you know, Harvey would call really early and try to talk to Bob about Joyce and so on.
But, you know, when you're watching people you know who are in a relationship not getting along, when you're watching them have a fight or being neurotic with each other, you kind of want to, like, look away. It makes you really uncomfortable. But here you are, not only in the middle of it, but you should be kind of soaking it up so you can capture it in the screenplay. So, you know, what was it like for you? Because it was probably making you uncomfortable, but at the same time, you got to be using that as information to help you document what their relationship is like.
Well, our first trip to Cleveland to meet Harvey and Joyce, and this was even before we were officially on the project. It was kind of like a mutual check each other out trip. I'd say maybe within 10 minutes of meeting Harvey and Joyce, they had an argument, a very big vocal one. But Bob and I, we come from documentaries, so we kind of, we're pretty comfortable with watching things unfold and being the people who document it. The other thing also is that Harvey and Joyce, having spent a lot of time with them, they might argue a lot, but we've also seen a lot of strength in their marriage and, you know, sort of the beauty of their marriage. And, you know, I've seen Joyce do things to protect Harvey. I've seen Harvey do things to protect Joyce. And there's a lot of love there, too.
Now that you've done a movie about Harvey's comics which feature all the people, or at least a lot of the people in his actual life, have you become characters in his work?
Well, we've certainly popped up in one or two recently. Harvey documents everything in his life, so I know the movie is a big part of that. So, yeah, it comes full circle, I guess, and we're fair game for him now. And, you know, now we'll read his perspective on us, I guess.
Are you uncomfortable about being characters in his comics?
Well, it wouldn't be fair to be uncomfortable. I mean, he gave us license to make a movie about him, so that's his art form. And no, I'm not uncomfortable with it at all.
Taste of your own medicine.
Yeah, you know, it's fun, and let's see what he does.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Sherry Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini wrote and directed the new film American Splendor. It opens in New York, L.A., and Cleveland August 15th and will open in more cities in the following weeks. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer today is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Tapes and transcripts of Fresh Air are available at 1-877-213-7374 or on the internet at www.burrells.com. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Noah Feldman talks with us about advising Iraq's governing council on writing a new constitution. Feldman is also the author of After Jihad, which argues that the time is right for creating Islamic democracies. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.